Okay, Perek Dalet. V'ha'odam yoda eschava ishto. So Adam had, Adam had known his wife, or had relations with Chava, his wife. V'tahar v'telet es Kayin. She conceived and she gave birth to Kayin. V'tomer, she said, konisi ish es Hashem. I have acquired a man with God. Pasuk Beis. V'tosef loledes, and she gave birth again. Es Achiv, es Havel, this time to his brother Hevel. By he Hevel roetzon, but Kayin haya oved adama. Hevel became a shepherd, but Kayin was a tiller of the ground. He was a farmer. So, first of all, Hirsch points out, notice the names. Let's talk about the names Kayin. So the word Kayin is connected to the word kane. A kane is a stalk. He says that really kinyan has got to do with possession and ownership. And the things that man is most really comes to own is because of his productivity. When you produce something, then you own it by your strength. It's not really as much by buying something as acquisition by your strength or your power. That's what man really has the ability to get anything. Through your power, you get money, and through that money, you can buy stuff. And that's why Hashem is called Kone Shamayim Va'aretz. Hashem is the owner of heaven and earth, because through Hashem's power, he created everything. And a Kone is a stalk, because it produces blossoms and flowers. He says that Chava's reaction to have a child and say that I'm an owner, I have acquired a man with God, is not necessarily the greatest thing a mother could have said. He thinks that this might have been a reaction of self-pride, which was a bit of a distortion of the pure consciousness of motherhood. Like, what do you own? It's your, my kid, my child, mine. A mother imbued with the spirit of duty would have first remembered God. She would have thought of the new duties and tasks that come with God's gift. The reaction of self-pride reflected a distorted attitude and was a display of egotism and may have affected the character of the son, whose name expresses even greater self-pride. He says that Kayin is a little bit different than Kanisi. It's even stronger. I'm not going to get into the grammar. But the name Kayin, he believes, he's suggesting strongly, is because that's what the mother understood at the time, that this is hers, she owns. And the idea of ownership became part of who Kayin was. My world. He also thinks that the fact that it says that in the past tense, hold on a second, by the birth of Hevel, hold on. Batosef Ode, I'm not sure where he got that from. Yada's past tense. Yada is perfect past tense, that we're looking back on what happened as if there was some episode that we're now in and we were thinking back to. So he suggests the following, that Hevel, and he has some sources for this, and it's Machlokas, he says, there's a Medrash that says not like this. There's one Medrash that says the Chai and Hevel were twins, but he would like to apparently suggest otherwise because of this. That looking back, initially what happened was she gave birth to Kayin, but now it's already different. Now she gave birth to Hevel. In other words, during the time in Gan Eden, that's the original birth. She gave birth to Kayin. But after it got kicked out of Gan Eden, now Hevel was born. So the Vatosef Od and Pasuk Beis is what happens currently, but the initial Pasuk Aleph, Adam Yada, that's like, but earlier there was this other birth, and that was Kayin in Gan Eden. So when everything's smiling at you, you call your kid because you're involved in the stuff that you own, your world. When you realize that life is transient and you don't know what's going to be anymore, you were just kicked out of Gan Eden. So now she's a little bit less possessive because she realizes that you don't know what's going to happen next. And now she's projecting her own experience onto her child. It's a higher madrega than all about ownership. It's not yet the perfect name for a kid. It's still projecting where you're at onto your kid. You'll see later by Shace, the third son, that they've already elevated and the name already does reflect the sense of duty. We'll get to that eventually. But now it's a little bit better, but it's still, she's projecting who she is and they're feeling. He also says that at this point now, you never know what's going to be with you. The hassles of being kicked down a Gan Eden, who wants another kid right now? It's going to be rough. How are you going to deal with it? It's going to be, so that also is included in the name, he thinks. Okay, so Cain then, if we're going to go with this, Cain has some issues because of the projection of the name and what he stands for, ownership and self-centeredness and self-pride. Whereas Hevel might be a little bit above that because his name already defines that life isn't quite like that. You never know what's going to come up with life, what life's going to throw at you. And you don't be so rooted in everything and be sure it's all my world. And indeed, their professions reflect exactly that. Because, and he says, notice this, by the way, that even though Cain was born first at the end of Pasuk Beis, it mentions Hevel before Cain. Hevel wrote its own. Hevel was a shepherd, but Cain hay over adama, and Cain was a farmer. So why did it talk about Hevel first? He says, because what we expect after the kicked out of Gan Eden, when Hashem said, you're going to, by the sweat of your brow, so we know you're going to be, everyone's going to have to work and be a farmer. We know that. The chiddush is that someone came up with a new idea to not just do that, but to be beyond being stuck in the field. That's already the chiddush of Hevel. That's why it's put first. Look what Hevel thought of, beyond the norm, to actually go and do something different. And what's the difference between the two of them? So Hirsch points out, a farmer is essentially a slave to his field. It lowers him to the level of the soil. Once he places his neck under the yoke of the pursuit of possessions, his spirit too becomes bowed. He can be manipulated through his desire for property, which leads to slavery, because you're going to compete and you're going to want someone else to work for you, and then they're going to manipulate him to work for you in ways that he didn't want. One man is subjugated to the next. The farmer can easily become to worship the forces of nature, on whose influence hinges the success of his field. Agricultural people were the first to lose faith in God and in the higher dignity of man. And it was in their midst that slavery and idolatry first emerged. And we're going to encounter that in Mitzrayim, which was a culture of slavery and idolatry. They were the Memtes Shari Toma, and they were a caste system where slaves had slaves. It was that the two go hand in hand. And Mitzrayim was famous for its agriculture. That's why, because they had the Nile River and it could naturally irrigate all the fields that were there. By contrast, he says, look at a shepherd. There's much virtue and advantage in pastoral life. The shepherd works mainly with living creatures, and the care he extends to them fosters in him humane feelings of tenderness and empathy. His property is movable. The flock needs the shepherd's care, but does not owe its very existence to man, right? Fields can't find, you can't have fields unless someone plants seeds, but you can have a sheep that can somehow find their way. If you wouldn't have a shepherd, somehow some sheep could survive. As a result, the shepherd is saved from the danger of attaching too much value to himself and to his property. His vocation does not drain all his energy or occupy his mind to a great extent, and he has time to elevate his spirit to divine and humane values. That's why our forefathers were shepherds, right? We know Avraham Yitzchak Yaakov, they were shepherds. So was Moshe and David. There's a reason why they were shepherds. And it's also, he says, the reason why the Mitzrim disliked the whole trade of being a shepherd, because it was the exact opposite of where they were coming from. They were into the land and possession, ownership, and they were a slave culture, an idolatrous culture. And shepherds are the exact opposite. The whole mindset of a shepherd is the opposite. What is the Torah's answer to dealing with agriculture? After all, Hashem tells us to go live in Eretz Yisrael eventually and to live in a land and be an agricultural society. So what's Hashem's answer to that? So the Torah has answers to that. And that's going to eventually, we'll get to those, the symbolism of all this. We have Shabbos, we have Shemitah, we have Kilayim, Arla, Leket, Shikcha, and Peah. All of these agricultural laws are there to make us realize that we shouldn't be so possessive, that all of the things that we have are God's world, and we're there to elevate his world into something higher.
I just wanted to mention about the discussion of Cain and Hevel. It almost seems counterintuitive, right? That Cain is the one that's born in Gan Eden when things are good. And there, the impression upon the child is the opposite, where you're imbuing him with this sense of complete self-worth that he can be. And then the opposite, right?
When you would think
Hevel
so.
Was born outside of Gan Eden.
This is exactly what happens all the time to us. This is Hashem plants the Jews in Eretz Yisrael and gives us another chance at a similar thing to Gan Eden, right? And what happens? We take all the prosperity and we understand that it's all about us. And we become, right? It's all me. That's the danger of prosperity. And that's why Hashem gives us the tikkun is galus where we don't have it. Unfortunately, we're very good at being Jews in galus, and we're not so good at remaining true and faithful when we have prosperity. That's our, it go over and over again. This is the sad story of Jewish history, of human history. But yeah, you're right. You would think the purity of Gan Eden, but no, that's the whole problem. That we never take the advantage of the prosperity and throw it back in to sustain it. If only we could, then everything, that'd be the end of everything. It'd be beautiful, perfect, all fixed. When we get that, ultimately we're going to get there. That's the goal of all of history.